Good morning, folks. It's time for Democratic Perspective, brought to you by the Verde Valley Independent Democrats, a weekly talk show about political issues facing the Verde Valley, Sedona, Northern Arizona, and the nation at large. Join us for a stimulating, thought-provoking discussion. You'll get the facts as we focus on the real challenges facing Arizonans. Good morning, folks. Steve Williamson here.
Mike Cosentino here. We're doing immigration therapy this morning. I kind of like that.
Immigration
therapy. Who else
therapy?
We got over here? We got a full studio.
And
this
Gary
morning.
LeMaster.
Gary is one of our producers, or writers, and researchers. And we wanted to talk about the new immigration bill that's called, what is it called, Gary? Senate
744.
S744. I love all these numbers and stuff. So we went from SB 1070 to S744. But
this is
do
kind
you want
of
to give
antidote.
Us a bit of a history of immigration? Because you know, the entire country is founded on immigrants.
Basically, we're all, you know, almost all of the population is immigrants, other than Native Americans, obviously. This problem is gone back. Most of the people who have come to the U.S. from Europe and elsewhere, and now from Mexico and Central America, have been displaced economically and often because of persecution for religion, and we also have groups that are refugees from war-torn areas that, you know, we have an international agreement will take refugees from political refugees.
And some of them are not the stereotype. One of my professors was from Switzerland, and I asked him one time, why did you move to the United States? And he said, well, in my small town in Switzerland, unless your father was a baker and owned a baker, you couldn't become one. You couldn't become a silversmith. You couldn't become a banker. The whole system was locked down. And so you have people coming from Europe, certainly economically advanced countries, again, originally for opportunity here, just like most of the undocumented folks.
Well, and to escape as well. My ancestors came here in the 1600s. They were Protestants that were being persecuted by the royalty and the Catholic Church. So that was kind of the initial wave of immigrants into the U.S. And then you had, you know, issues like the potato famine in Ireland, and so it goes. What's happened with the current wave of immigrants from Central America and Mexico is again economic, and it's also a safety issue. If you look into it, you find that when NAFTA was passed, the U.S. agribusiness started, the large companies started dumping corn into Mexico and Central America in large quantities at a cheaper price than the small farmers in Mexico and Central America could raise it. And so those people, you know, the farmers went out of business. They basically had no choice but to go into the cities looking for work. When they got to the cities, there were no jobs. So they moved closer to the U.S. border, hoping to catch on with some of the large factories just south of the border. And then they, you know, not only couldn't find jobs, that they were exposed to the drug cartel violence. So
it's always been about avoidance or opportunity. You know, yeah. Avoiding the cartel violence. My people came over in the early 1900s to get away from World War I and for opportunity. Interesting though, four brothers came over, three went back. And obviously my grandfather stayed.
It's the thing about immigration, folks, a much more complex process than you see. And a tremendous number of people working when I was in New York who were overstayed basically their student visas or their, you know, just vacation visas. And I don't think that's probably the majority of people.
Yeah, I think so, too, especially in Sedona.
The image we have is that the majority of the people who are here undocumented are people who came over from Mexico and walked across the border one way or the other. Actually, it's people overstaying their visas.
And a large percentage of those are not Latino.
Yeah.
They're from China, they're from Eastern Europe, they're from all over the world.
Let's look at the size of the problem. So I've usually got a bunch of statistics here.
I like this. I like statistics.
There are, these are as of 2011, there are 40.4 million foreign-born people residing in the U.S. In 1960, it was 9.7 million. So it's really risen, number of people risen. 15.5 million of them are naturalized U.S. citizens. 13.1 are permanent legal residents. And 11.1 are unauthorized migrants. So there's a vast majority of the foreign-born people in the United States are all here legally or on the process to citizenship. And if you haven't watched it, when I worked with the people coming from Asia and watched them be citizens and watched them reading their citizen study book, and they would talk to me about they were anxious to start voting and stuff, it's really aside from everything else, an inspiring process to see people really beginning to get a hold of being in America and being American citizens.
And so much pride once they realize that goal.
So you don't really want to cut that off if you can avoid it. The problem is if there's 11.1 million people here with undocumented, there's no easy solution to it. And you can go back and say, well, they shouldn't be here or they should be here or they're an economic plus. But the truth is that you have the problem of 11 million undocumented people.
Right.
It has to be solved as a realistic problem. It can't be we should have, would have, could have kind of.
A wonderful article by Ruben Navarrete said talked about that it doesn't help. In other words, the GOP uses those 11 million to generate a lot of fear. And as there's always been of immigrants, there's always been all kinds of fears. And he lists, and maybe we'll get to them in a little while, the 10 most common fears from immigrants, of people fear of immigration. But it doesn't help. In other words, you know, he's saying that all these fears, all this fear-mongering doesn't help the problem. You're like you just said, the problem needs to be solved, and it can be. And then certainly the Senate bill, whether it solves a problem or not, it should at least take some steps.
And if you're frightened into inaction, I mean, that's a very dangerous place to be. And I agree with you, Mike. I think far too much of our politics is based on fears and driving fears and using fears to get power.
It was the heart of the 2010 elections, especially here in Arizona. You know, the finish the dang fence. You know, I had one candidate who shall remain nameless go on a racist rant about how all of these immigrants, you know, don't want to be in the U.S. They hate our culture. They don't try to learn English. They, you know, it went on and on and on. And
but they've said that about every wave of immigrants.
Yeah.
They said that about the Scots-Irish. They said that about the Irish. They said it about Italians. They said it about Eastern Europeans.
They said it about the Catholics when they came in.
They always say that because people have different values. And so it does force people to live near people with different cultures, which is one reason that we're such a rich and powerful nation, as we have all these different streams coming in from all over the world, all different kinds of people, all different cultures, all different. You see that easily in food, but you can see it in a thousand other different ways too.
Well, some of the fears are that you're just, as far as the Republicans are concerned, you're just inviting in more people who are going to vote against the Republican Party.
Right. Well, they're talking about the Republican Act, 1986. And I shouldn't call it a Republican, but it was under Ronald Reagan, and Ronald Reagan supported it. And it provided amnesty. What happened in 86 was that there was this provision that's now the equivalent of modern E-Verify. You know, there was a thing where the employers were not going to hire people who weren't here illegally. Now, what really happened was there was tremendous economic resistance by the employers to enforcing any of this part of the act. And so there was no, basically, enforcement of the whole other side of this thing.
Now, there are some real fears, but I want to talk about one of the ridiculous fears of that this is from Senator Ted Cruz of Texas, that legal immigration will create a de facto affirmative action by providing an incentive for employers to hire the new residents because they're not covered by Obamacare, and therefore it's, I mean, this is the extent that they twist this, that you're going to hire new immigrants,
but they're going to have to pay everything else. I mean, they're going to be eligible for unemployment insurance. They're going to be paying in Social Security.
Well, that's why the budget office talks about projecting $1 trillion in savings in 20 years.
Right.
It should stabilize Social Security to a degree,
all
because
these
have all these younger people,
yeah,
paying in legally. Now, if you increase the number of on the books legal guys paying in, it increases tremendously, stabilizes Social Security.
They're already contributing $11 to $12 million in payroll taxes without receiving any benefits from their, right, Social Security contributions.
Some
and
guys
Medicare
would say that's a good thing, Gary. You know, let them pay in. And
well, I'm sure that's part of it. You know, and the other thing I think that gets lost in this whole argument is, I mean, well, a couple of things I'd like to point out. You just had this widely discredited report. I think it was from the Heritage Foundation.
Yes.
That was, you know, completely racist in saying that basically brown and black people are stupid. They have lower IQs. So it'll take generations for them to come up to our standards. You know, that was the basis for the argument against the immigration reform, and it's been, you know, widely discredited. It's obviously, you know, not true. But the other part of this that I think gets lost is the businesses in the U.S. that actually recruit undocumented workers.
Right.
It's been going on since, you know, the early 1900s or late 1800s.
One of the Republican gripes against the bill is it's a huge, complicated bill, right? And one of the things that it's very long, has lots of provisions, and one of them is exactly what you're talking about. It'll make it easier for foreign-born, usually technical workers to come and get a permission to stay and work in the U.S. It'll ease their visa requirements, right? And that's one small segment of this bill. And you know, and there's a group of right wingers who are arguing we shouldn't even do this bill because it's long and complicated. If you're talking about general stuff like the Constitution and Declaration of Independence, it can be a few thousand words. If you're making laws for 310 million people, it's going to be long and complicated. The process takes months and months. Everybody, all the stakeholders will want a piece of it. Whether they're right or wrong, they're going to want some influence in the bill. And so the high-tech corporations want an easing of we're talking about a tiny number of people, of high-tech workers that they're having trouble finding in the U.S.
The only reason these bills are so long, and by the way, it doesn't matter if it's a Republican-sponsored bill or a Democrat-sponsored bill, they're all long. And the only reason they're so long, especially when they get into complex issues like health care and immigration, is that as soon as the bill is passed, you have a whole raft of attorneys looking for the first loophole they can find.
Right.
And so the reason they're so long is you have to try to close those loopholes.
And the Title I of the bill, since we're going to talk about the bill, is border security.
Yeah.
That, you know, and down at the coffee shop, we laugh at border security, because we know that you're not going to secure the border.
It's called a border security, economic opportunity, and immigration modernization act.
There you go. That, now I feel better. Just that, that I feel better.
Doesn't
just,
that make you feel
just
better,
hearing
Doesn't
that.
That make you feel a lot better?
But the idea,
the exact name of it.
Gary did wonderful research on this, going from $300 million in 1993 to $380 billion in 2011, all for border security. But the bill does mandate an incredible amount. It fit 700 miles of fence. We keep hearing about and know that it's.
If you want an interesting but not really relevant statistic, in 1904,
that's what we're about.
They had irrelevant. 1904. They had 75 guys who were called a mounted watch on the entire 2,000 mile border. 75. That was the highest number they got, and the Border Patrol was not formed until I think 1924. So a lot of this is more recent than people realize.
Yeah, and you know, I was in China, you know, several times, not all that long ago, and stood atop the Great Wall, and walked a considerable distance on the Great Wall. The dang fence, the border fence, to me is just another Great Wall, and the Great Wall failed. You know, if you study history, it was an absolute, you know, abysmal failure.
They all
how
have.
Much are they spending on this thing? And Gary, there's a huge increase in they're already spending billions, but they're spending billions more on the wall. I should say that in Gary's history here that we have, the first anti-immigrant bills that were actually passed were the Page Act in 1875. And it's also known as the Asian Exclusion Act. The first control of immigration was aimed only at basically Chinese.
Right, and it was based on language again, you know,
yes.
Because they spoke a different language.
Then they had a language test bill. And
right.
Of course, if you're a Chinese guy working on a railroad, you know, your chances are small.
It was called the Literacy Act of 1917, and then we had the Immigration Act of 1924 that were, you know, both passed to stop immigration. Then in the 50s, you had the McCarthyist period where we were, anybody that was even had a hint of a communist background was ruled ineligible, and we were trying to deport them and bar them from the country. And then there's the racist titled bill from the 1950s called Operation Wetback that was passed after a record of, it came after a 6,000% increase in immigrants, mostly recruited, I might add,
by businesses
and
buildings. Yeah.
And they rounded up 1,078,106 immigrants and put them on ships and trains and in some cases dumped them in the desert to die. That was under the Eisenhower administration. Now, you know, that didn't work, so now you're going to do that to 11 million people?
What do you think? One of the justifications for all these billions and billions of dollars on the wall is that it'll prevent terrorists
from coming into the country. That's the big fear. We're playing on those fears again.
And I don't have statistics on this, but of known terrorist, you know, entries into the U.S., they've come in from Canada, from the northern border, not from the southern border. I don't know of any that...
I'm just wondering how efficient, I mean, immigration aside, how efficient it is in reducing terrorism, which was one of the justifications for moving it to the Department of Homeland Security, one of the justifications for quadrupling the budget.
For the biggest...
Is that the way you can really stop terrorists, I wonder?
An issue associated with this that reminds me of is until the Obama administration, we were not checking any of the vehicles that were crossing the border into Mexico from the United States. And under the Obama administration, we've started doing that and confiscating billions of dollars of cash and weapons that were being, you know, transported to the drug cartels.
I've always thought that's a good way to go after the cartels, because you'll see the statistics, marijuana seized worth $20 million. Well, the cartel has paid some farmer in Mexico, you know, $2,000 for it. So when you seize it, it seizes their potential profit, but it doesn't actually take money away from them. And if you seize their guns, and that they paid a premium sometimes for, and you seize their money, it hurts them more. But let's focus on immigration.
Yeah, one of the terms you're going to get to know in the next few months and maybe longer is registered provisional immigrant, and that is the one of the ways in Title II of the legislation that RPI, a registered provisional immigrant, is the one of the routes to citizenship. It's good for 6 years, and you have to renew it every 6 years. And if you've kept your nose clean for 10 years, then you can get to the next level of this has become the new green card status as RPI, registered provisional immigrant.
It's a 13-year process to become a citizen. You become a provisional for 6 years. You can renew it. You have to have a really clean record for 6 years, right? And then you begin to really apply to be a citizen.
So really,
13 years long.
And it amounts to an immigrant visa. You know, we talk about border security. Another part the law covers is internal security. In other words, we already said that a lot of undocumented came from overstaying visas, student visas, work visas, combination visas. It does lighten up. It does clear up a lot of that stuff, by the way. In other words, it makes it easier to come for a dual purpose. And so there's lots of good things, that the Senate put into the bill that will make things a lot clearer and a lot smoother and more efficient when it comes to our immigrant problem.
And I should point out that none of the things, the measures contained in the immigration bill really go into effect until we reach effective control of the border. So it's control first, and then all the other things follow. And they define effective control as 90% effectiveness, and that means 9 apprehensions and turnbacks for every documented getaway.
That seems very difficult to reach. I mean, I see them pushing for an absolute wall that just is not is never going to be.
No,
and the expense of it. I know. I'm astonished at the amount of money that we're willing to spend on this thing. It's
$160 billion has been spent on border security since 2007, I believe.
And the bill increases the spending on the wall. There are about 21,000 Border Patrolmen now. It adds, 19?
It adds about, I've seen estimates of $34 billion to $40 billion that would be added to pay for the new Border Patrol and for the expansion of the fence. And once the fence is built, that's not even good enough for some of these people. They want to have a double fence, kind of like the Iron Curtain through Berlin. They want to have a no man's land in between two fences and to top the fence with concertina wire. And, of course, you've had some of the Tea Party people talking about putting explosives and shooting immigrants that are seen to try.
That's the image I want for you. The United States, yes, sir.
Yes.
I think there are something like 300 million visa visitors to the United States a year. It's just a massive thing. And they want to increase the Border Patrol to 40,000 guys. It's just an astonishing expense.
I suggested taking retirees. Mostly, you know, from northern Arizona, and putting them every 100 yards on the border with an M16.
The Minutemen.
That's it, exactly. And when we could have overlapping fields of fire, and about 200 of them would shoot themselves on the first day.
Some of them might remember how to shoot an M16 if they're our age.
If we're going to shoot, you know, this again seems somewhat racist. So we're going to shoot the brown people climbing over the wall to the southern border, but what are we going to do with the Europeans and the Asians that are overstaying their visas? Are we going to round them up and execute them?
Well, that's just it. I mean, you can get some 12-year-old girl coming across the border in your sights and then decide whether to shoot her or not. Or you can, you know, go down to one of the local watering holes and find lots of people overstaying their visas.
So the bill, and you could read us the name again. Bill Senate S-744 was passed by, I think, 68 senators.
Yeah, 14
Republicans voted for it. Yeah. It was one of the few bipartisan things they've done in years.
And it was created by the Gang of Eight, if you haven't heard that term already.
That's
it was
right.
Four Democrats and four Republicans. The Republicans included John McCain and Robert Menendez was a Democrat.
Right.
But Marco Rubio.
We got to give McCain his props on this. You know what I mean? We beat him up a lot on the show, but on this one, he deserves a little.
Well, he's gone back to where he was before after he won election. When he was running for election,
run to the right so he could head off the Tea Party.
But he's come back on that. So in the U.S. Senate, depending on how you look at it, it is so extreme and so partisan, they actually passed this bill. What do you, Mike and Gary, what do you think the chances are of getting it through the House, which has a caucus of people who don't believe in compromise at all, who seem willing to sabotage the United States government to try to get what they want? They seem willing to try to break the government's ability to borrow money, everything.
Well, this is a wonderful country, and we have all kinds of ways of getting deals done. I'm hoping, and at least according to what I read, Boehner's going to do a backroom deal. I mean, he has not declared how he feels about the bill.
He's already stated that they will not bring up the Senate bill in the House.
That they spent so much time and effort.
He's already stated that it's dead on arrival in the House, and he's repeated that on numerous occasions. What he said that they will do instead is to take the immigration issue and break it apart and into pieces and bring up that legislation one piece at a time. So.
Well, he talked about in conference, and when I say backroom, I meant conference committee, so that remains to
There's
be seen.
There's a lot of opposition for them to even go in conference with the Senate among the most extreme Tea Party members of
McCain
the House.
Said, we are not winning. And by that, he meant in the House.
Yeah, they don't want to go into a conference because conferences between the Senate and the House, you have a House bill and you have a Senate bill and you work out something in between. And they don't believe in compromise. And so they don't want to even go to the Senate and have a conference committee that might possibly change the bill.
The conservative websites have that all over. They're afraid of the conference committee, and that's part of what they...
The other argument that really, I think, resonates, I'll see what you guys think, with the far right, and got a couple of minutes left, is the argument that Obama is so terrible he won't enforce whatever bill is done. We can't trust the Obama administration to do anything. He's a Muslim, foreign-born, socialist, and whatever.
Despite the fact that he's deported more people than immigrants than any president in history,
and
they've apprehended 365,000 people in 2012 in alone, 1 year, 365,000.
We do have a couple of announcements, folks. We'll come back to this immigration issue again. I really want to thank Gary for all the research. We've got, I think it was like 13 type pages to print out.
I won't put all of that in the website, by the way.
Yes. Democrats of Red Rock is honoring the founders of the organization, a group of women who founded ADORE 10 years ago. Very small number of people. I think about a dozen women founded it and has now got hundreds of things. They're having a brunch on August 25th at the Heartline Cafe. Menu looks great. Felice Rodolini is going to be the guest speaker. She's a brilliant speaker.
Attorney General candidate.
Is candidate for Attorney General. That's Thursday, August 25th. Heartline Cafe. Information will be on the website. If you're interested, please go and sign up ahead of time, because they need to give the restaurant a firm count of how many people are coming.
DORA is one of our helpful organizations that help keep us on the air.
And
Dove is the other. Democrats of the Verde Valley is the other one.
And we have our meeting coming up the fourth Thursday of August.
At Randall's Restaurant.
At Randall's Restaurant in Cottonwood.
And Democrats of the Red Rocks has a fundraiser coming up on August 1st.
Go to the website.
And listening to Democratic Perspective, brought to you by the Verde Valley Independent Democrats, a weekly talk show focusing on the political issues facing the Verde Valley, Sedona, Northern Arizona, and the nation at large. Catch us every Monday morning after the 8 o'clock news, right here on AM 780 KAZM. It's beautiful out there, folks. Have a great day.